I don't suppose it will surprise many of our listeners to be told that in our high-tech, data-rich age, we have to make a lot more decisions now than we ever have in the past, and that all this is very taxing on our brains and can have a negative effect on brain function. Our next guest, Dr. Frank Ferraro, is an associate professor of psychology at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln, Nebraska, and he has studied this problem and has come up with a possible way to restore brain function, as I understand it, involving canoes and sawbill outfitters here in Cook County. Dr. Ferraro joins us on the phone now to explain. Dr. Ferraro, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I, since you're a fellow canoe tripper, I'm sure it's all right if I call you Frank instead of
Frank,
Dr.
Frank is great. Yes, okay. Please do.
First of all, maybe you could describe for the listeners your view of the impact that the high-tech world has on our ability to pay attention.
Yeah, that's kind of the heart of the issue, is that our world is demanding a lot of resources from our brains, so... The big difference now between, what our brain can do and what it's sort of has been able to do in the past is that we have a lot of things that demand quick responses, traffic lights, emails that beep at us, Facebook updates, and these sort of things are possible for our brain to handle. We can deal with multiple pieces of information, but the key part of that is that we can only do it well for a certain period of time, and then there becomes a point where we start to make errors, where we get fatigued, and it's the constant vigilance that is what's taxing. The brain can pay attention to things for short periods of time in a high vigilant way, but for long periods of time, always doing it is where we start to have problems, and that leads to errors. It leads to sort of the things that we all attribute to stress and fatigue, which is, we can't think as clearly, we can't make a decision as fast, and sometimes we don't even make decisions at all because it's just too hard, we're too tired.
And there's a term here called attention restoration theory.
Yes.
in what I've read, and I know you're interested in that and working on that. And what is that? It sounds like it has something to do with helping that situation.
Yeah, so that the attention restoration theory was developed by a psychologist in Michigan, and his name was Stephen Kaplan, and Kaplan developed attention restoration with a lot of stories, anecdotal reports, as well as some laboratory experiments on how when we get into natural settings, we can disconnect from some of those things that tax our cognitive resources, and the theory is that outdoor experiences change our attention. It doesn't mean that we don't pay attention, but we pay attention in a more involuntary way rather than a very voluntary, vigilant, tracking way. And so when we do that, when we actually shift our attention to, the beauty of a tree or the flowing aspects of water if we're on a canoe trip, we still have to pay attention, but we're doing it in a more soft, he called it soft, fascinating way. And that allows resources to be replenished in the brain. And that's the underlying theory is where is that happening? And then we can get into that perhaps later. But those other parts of our brain that are allowed to replenish then allow us to make better decisions. But we have to give ourselves opportunities for that. And we have to give ourselves experiences, and my argument is that one of the best ways to get those experiences is in the natural world.
So you tested this idea of yours and the Michigan professors with a canoe trip out of Sawbill, correct?
Correct.
Tell us about that. How did that come about? How did you decide to do that, and what was your goal?
It's a fun thing, and I want to give credit, first of all, we have a great professor here, Dr. Dale Benham, in the biology department, and he works... his wife, Dr. Sam Matthews Benham, also history department, and Dr. Jerry Bricker, who's also in biology. This wasn't my idea. It was actually Dr. Benham's idea, and he basically said, we need to get, I want to offer a class where we talk about wilderness and we talk about the necessity of wilderness, but one of the best ways to to get students to understand that is to take them on a trip and let them experience true wilderness. So he began taking students to Boundary Waters and launching out of Sawbill and making trips up there, six-day trips. And he invited me to go along, started inviting me to go on some trips. Basically, first one was just with him and his wife, Sam Matthews, Benham, and I was just impressed with how much better I felt. And I thought, there's something going on here psychologically. I didn't train in this area, but I started to experience the effects myself, I think, more directly. And I grew up in a very urban environment. I didn't have a lot of outdoor experiences, so I can't claim that I was always an outdoorsman. But I started to experience things personally, and I said, there's something that these students must be experiencing. We must be able to maybe record that or measure that on these sorts of trips. Mm-hmm. And so because of his interest in the class and his connection to the students, I was allowed to be folded into that and then began looking at it in terms of my background in psychology.
And he wasn't looking at it in that way as a psychologist. Is that correct? Or?
Right. He's a botanist, and so his angle was to talk about necessity of wilderness from sort of a broad angle and looking at, they do great things up there. They give them, like, tree quizzes, and they have to find their favorite plant while they're up there. And that's great because it gives them that side of it, and then I try to offer the psychological benefit side when we're on those trips.
Okay, so where exactly did you go, and how did you test your idea of this attention restoration?
Well, we did several different loops within launching out of Sawbill, and we basically, one of the trips that I did, we went up through Sawbill, up through Cherokee, and then up to Long Island, and then back down to the Sawbill point, and some of the other professors do different loops, and so we are separate and in different areas. But the main thing is that we are away from our phones, we're away from any technology for those 6 days. And what I do is I give them a test called the Remote Associates Test before we leave. And it's just it's an old test of creativity. It's a 10-item test, and they give these, they're given word pairs, actually a triad, three words, and then the solution is a fourth word that they have to come up with. And we could give an example.
Yeah, why don't you give us an example?
Here's the test that they get at the beginning. So this one's kind of fun. What is the correct fourth word to these three words I'm gonna give you? So here it is: widow, bite, and monkey. There is a fourth word that is associated with all of those three.
Not jungle, not black.
Nope.
I don't know. My attention is focused somewhere else.
Right. You need nature. you need a canoe trip. So the solution is a spider.
Oh,
the reason it is widow spider, spider bite, and spider monkey.
Sure.
And it's a measurement of creativity. We call it convergent creativity because you do have to come up with one word, so it converges down into one answer. But you do have to think about those three words and try to find a connection between them. And it is a hard test, actually. And if you're fatigued, it is hard to do.
Exactly. I did notice in that article I read about you, they had several examples.
Yes.
And I actually threw one out this morning when I was promoting this interview we were going to be doing. I put it on, the one that's in the article, Envy, Golf, and Bean. And by golly, if somebody didn't call in pretty quickly, who had their attention focused pretty well.
That's good.
But the co-hosts that I was talking to at the time couldn't think of it either. So, I'm no worse than they were.
And it is a situation where we give them kind of a mixture of hard and easy, medium, and hard questions. And so what they do is they take that test at the beginning. And they're still sort of connected to their technology at that point, but then they take another test 3 days in, and then 6 days after the trip is nearly over, they retake the test. And the amazing thing is they start off only getting about, on average, 3 out of those 10 items correct, and by the time they've completed the canoe trip, on the date I published, they scored almost 7.5 items correct, And that's better than a group that stays indoors that we test back at the university. They only get on average 5 correct. So if we run the statistics and we show that it's a statistically significant difference. And it's not that they just are good at this test to begin with, because they don't do very well to start. It's that they actually do improve during the actual outdoor trip. And I just thought that was remarkable.
Does each test have different set of 3 words?
Correct.
Different sets of 3 words.
Yeah.
Yes. So you have an idea of that they're equally difficult.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we try to match it on difficulty, but we don't want to show them exactly the same words every time, because they could have a practice effect, just get better because they see the words the same way. So we try to control for that.
If you have just joined us, we are speaking with Dr. Frank Ferraro, Associate Professor of Psychology at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Nebraska, who talking about a study he did of an idea that wilderness experience could help improve or help restore ability or attention that otherwise is too divided to allow these students to improve on these association tests. Now, what's happening in the brain to cause the improvement like this?
That is the greatest question, and that is the most mysterious question of this whole process, is that Kaplan proposed the attention restoration theory, but it's a theory that was really built on anecdotal evidence, some gardening and natural experiences and local experiences, but we don't have a lot of research in psychology or in neuroscience on what is the brain mechanism of attention restoration. We see it in behavior. We see it on these sort of association tests, mm-hmm. but we have very little evidence in terms of what's happening in the brain. The picture right now seems to indicate that certain hormones are changed, which can affect brain function. So we know that like a stress hormone called cortisol does tend to decrease on these outdoor experiences. And some people have actually measured hormones from people's saliva when they go out on wilderness trips, and that's very intriguing. The difficulty is to find a way to measure brain function when you're in a canoe, you know, and try to figure out if that is a reliable and valid method. I propose in the paper some research that was done by other neuroscientists, and they sort of have found that if you kind of put people in these brain imaging scanners, there's sort of what they call a default mode network in the brain. And this is just something that these people notice. They put people in the scanner, and their brain doesn't entirely shut off. There is still, like, activity in some of the prefrontal cortex of the brain, the cingulate cortex of the brain. There's also an area called the parietal cortex and hippocampus. This circuitry seems to become active when we are relaxed. So where they're sitting calmly in the scanner, they've seen this default mode activate, and that's very interesting. The possibility is that this default mode network is also underpinning attention restoration in the wilderness. It's not been shown, but it is very intriguing.
You'd have to put their brains in a scanner while you're in the wilderness in order to document that, I suppose.
Yes, and I guess the hope is that so many things are getting smaller, so many pieces of technology are more portable, that perhaps we have some capabilities of putting EEG-type electrodes on the scalp, and perhaps that could be in a backpack, and those things could be recorded and taken back to laboratories once the trip is over. And I have a lot of hope that maybe our technology will allow us to one day do that.
What does something like this last very long when people have had this experience, wilderness experience, and go back to their normal lives?
I think it fades pretty quickly because of our the intense vigilance that we need on so many pieces of technology. I experienced it pretty robustly when we get done when we come back to Sawmill, and then I start checking my phone.
Yeah.
It's a very weird experience. I feel that all of a sudden now I have to start paying attention to, you know, how many emails I have left, or 10 out of the 14 I haven't checked yet, and so these things start rolling in your head. We we know from research that one thing is that the effect is usually not measured after you get done with the trip, and that's something I want to pursue more of, is how long does like an enhancement of creativity, especially in students, how long does that last? Does that mm-hmm. carry back to them, to the university, or does it really literally fade within hours of coming back online, so to speak? And I think the way the brain functions, what I know about it, is that I bet you it fades pretty quickly, which points to the idea that we need to continually expose ourselves to these natural environments. We need to give ourselves doses of this to make ourselves healthy.
Sure. What about, in general, do you see psychological benefit from just a wilderness experience?
Yeah, I think in general, I mean, so many things I think do relate to stress reduction, and it has that component to it. I think there is an element of connecting to something bigger than you. I feel that very profoundly on these trips, that I feel more at peace with myself and decisions I have to make, but I also feel like I'm part of something more connected and larger, and it's okay to feel pretty small, I think, and we talked to the students about that experience. You know, you look up at the stars and you see that there are more than you've ever seen in your life, perhaps, when you're out there. Mm-hmm. And you feel very small, and that's not a bad thing. In fact, that can give you some very good perspective about your life, perspective about how you treat one another and sort of your role on this planet. And so there's kind of a profound philosophical component to these wilderness experiences beyond any benefit to psychology or to creativity. I think it has a nice aspect to who we are as humans.
Thank you very much for your interest in this aspect of and the fact that we here in Cook County can offer that wilderness experience. I hope we can always offer that wilderness experience going forward. Up here. I wonder, Dr. Ferraro, is there anywhere that folks can get more information about intention restoration theory generally, or your study?
Sure. There's a website. There's an eco-psychology journal, and they do have free access to some of the articles, including mine, for periods of time. So it would just be ecopsychology.com.
Okay.
I would also ask them if you check into the American Psychological Association website, APA.org, and they also have a whole division on environmental psychology, and that's also a nice resource for those theories.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to tell us about this, and next time you come up on a canoe trip to Sawbill, give us a call.
That would be wonderful.
Catch up with you.
That is a wonderful thing, and it's a great place up there, and I just want to mention how beautiful and how peaceful it is. It's a wonderful, wonderful place.
Thanks a lot for the work you're doing and promoting the wilderness, too.